I know we often talk about big pyramid, but can we talk about big wireless for a second? If after years of overpaying for wireless, you're finally fed up from those wildly high wireless bills, bogus fees, and quote-unquote free perks that actually cost more in the long run, why not switch to Mint Mobile and keep your money where you can see it? Mint Mobile is here to rescue you from big wireless with premium wireless plans starting at $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. And you can even use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number, along with all of your contacts. It's a snap to switch. So ditch overpriced wireless and get 3 months of premium wireless service from Mint Mobile for $15 a month. If you like your money, Mint Mobile is for you. Shop plans at mintmobile.com/aftermlm. That's mintmobile.com/aftermlm. Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month 5 gigabyte plan required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customer offer for first 3 months only, then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details. It's February, which means Valentine's Day and my birthday are right around the corner. It might be the shortest month, but it's the best month. And if you're anything like me, you want the look and feel of luxury without the price tag. And y'all know, Quince is my one-stop shop for luxury essentials at affordable prices. Be still, my little Pisces heart. Quince offers a range of high-quality items at prices that are totally within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters from $50, a favorite of me and Mr. F for sure, washable silk tops and dresses, organic cotton sweaters, and 14-karat gold jewelry. And then my newest obsession, their stylish packing cubes that make prepping for a weekend getaway a breeze. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with safe, ethical, and responsible factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us, meaning that you can look and feel like $1 million without breaking the bank, something that definitely doesn't happen in MLM. Give yourself the luxury that you deserve with Quince. Go to quince.com/MLM for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/MLM to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/MLM. Hey, I'm Roberta Blevins, and this is Life After MLM, a podcast where we work to end the stigma of failure in an industry systemically designed for you to fail. Join us as we dive into the real-life stories of survivors, experts, and advocates, as we debunk the common myths and fallacies of cults, frauds, scams, and multi-level marketing. Hey, Hunbots and Hunbros, I am back, and thank you all so much for understanding I needed a break and for all of the kind words you sent. It was really, really fantastic and much needed. It was Mr. F's birthday, and we had this fun little adventure all over Southern California, and I got to show him all my favorite spots down by the beach here in San Diego, and we just, like, had the best time, and I hope that he had an amazing birthday. This episode is really kind of a fun episode. I got to meet Dr. Mara Einstein at the MLM conference, and we had some incredible conversations about deceptive marketing and MLMs and cults, and I said, you've got to come on the podcast. We've got to talk about this. So this episode really is a long time in the making, and I think a much needed conversation about the way that marketers and advertisers are deceiving us and how they're doing that, how that plays into the cult space, And we also talk about the spectrum of deception and social media and influencers. And it is just such a fun episode. And I think you are going to absolutely love her. And she was also in a Netflix documentary that is out now called Buy Now. So maybe the name is a little familiar to you. She also has a great book about the deceptive cult-like tactics that marketing uses called Hoodwinked that's coming out early next year. We're going to have her come back on. So as you're listening to this episode, think about any questions you might have or maybe experiences you've had and send those in so that I can prepare some fun stuff for us. And if you're in on the Patreon or you're in our Discord, go ahead and look for some stuff coming up as well. Other than that, please, please, please enjoy this episode. And again, thank you so much for giving me a break and letting me just live in the moment and be happy in a time where I was pretty low. Really appreciate you guys. Enjoy this episode. Welcome back to another episode of Life After MLM. I'm so excited. We have a special episode. I met this incredible woman at the MLM conference. We had a great conversation, and it's really taken us this long to actually get together to have this conversation, but we're having it, and that's the important part here. I would love to welcome to the show Dr. Mara Einstein. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing good.
I'm so excited for this conversation. I have been dying to have this conversation.
I'm so excited. You have so many cool things that you've been doing. You've got stuff that's coming up. You've got stuff that just came out. Like, I am so excited for everybody to meet you, to understand your education and what you offer to this community, and to just fall in love as well. You're just so great.
Oh, thank you.
So, Mara, let's talk about your book first. It's coming out in February. And it sort of encompasses so many of the things that we talk about here. And I'm so excited for it. I got a little pre-advanced reader's copy. It is fantastic. You guys are going to love it. There's a section on MLMs. It's great. Anyway, so Mara, tell us all about it.
Okay. So the book is called Hoodwinked: How Marketers Use the Same Tactics as Cults. The way that I actually started, which is so germane to your community, is I started the book because it was during COVID. And I was getting on my elliptical every morning and watching one thing or another. And I started watching The Vow about Nexium. And then I started watching Lula Rich. And I'm watching Lula Rich. I'm watching The Vow. And I'm going, Nexium and LuLaRoe are the same thing. Now, of course, as I started to do research, I found out I wasn't the first one who discovered this, of course. But I was sort of like, okay, so let's start to break this down. And let me say for people, for anyone who doesn't know me, I'm a former TV and advertising executive. I worked in marketing at MTV Networks. I worked at NBC. I worked at advertising agencies on things like Miller Beer and Dole Foods and Avis Cars and all kinds. I mean, I was working in advertising so long ago, I worked on Atari International. So, so that'll give you an idea of how long I've been doing this stuff. Well, anyway, I became an academic 25 years ago because I wanted to take what I understood about the industry and then help people to understand how marketing impacts them. And so from that research, I started looking at things like the intersection between religion and marketing. And there's a tremendous overlap between those two things. And so that started way back when I wrote my book called Brands of Faith. And I started looking at religion as a product to be sold. And so, you know, fast forward 20 years and Hoodwinked: How Marketers Use the Same Tactics as Cults is the culmination of 30 years worth of work for me, because it begins to look at, seriously, like I said, I've written 8 books. This is the book I am most proud of. It is everything that I am about in a book. And it looks at, yes, MLMs, but I start by looking at, it starts with brand cults and it goes to multi-level marketing. So in the book, what I'm talking about is a spectrum of the connection between marketers and cults. And so it starts with brand cults. And I'm sure if I said to your listeners, name a brand that's a cult.
Yeah. It's like Peloton, CrossFit is a good brand cult.
Right, CrossFit.
Lululemon.
Apple always comes up. Elon Musk and Tesla. We could go on and on and on and on and on. And traditionally, when we talked about brand cults, it was a couple. It was Apple, it was Oprah, it was Harley Davidson or Jeep, but not a lot. And what has happened more recently is that this has become the goal. The North Star for brands is to become a cult brand. And one of the things I talk about in the book is something called The Gathering. And The Gathering is one of the largest marketing and really, quite frankly, expensive marketing conferences that happens every year. And they call it The Gathering, but if you look in the URL still calls it The Cult Gathering. And what they do is they give prizes and sort of valorize any brand that has brought itself up to cult status. So it could be Zappos or Spotify or Barbie, right? Last year, all of those kinds of things. So in looking at this spectrum, one of the things I talk about, well, a lot of things I talk about in the book is the tools that marketers use and how those are the same as what cults do. But then I also talk about influencers as cults. Influencers who become conspiracy theorists, and then the conspiracy theorist then goes into multi-level marketing. And so I see multi-level marketing as the canary in the coal mine about where we're going in terms of how these cult tactics work. And all of this is dependent upon digital technology, because this wouldn't have happened if we weren't living in these kinds of spaces. And we weren't getting so wrapped up in anxiety and concern and being used by people in these spaces to get our emotions ginned up in order for them to be able to sell, quite frankly, because that's how they make money.
I always think about this digital space when sort of this culty stuff happens and think back to 30, 40 years ago when I was a kid and thinking like this would have never happened back then because of how easily accessible everybody's opinions are, right? Back in the day, when we couldn't connect as easily as we could now, you might have some wild conspiracy theorist in your town who's ringing a bell and holding a sign, and you're like, okay. But now he has the internet to find other bell ringing sign holder conspiracy theorists to gather in online spaces and share ideas and create mass hysteria that then trickles down to other people who are sort of on the fringe and having questions. And a lot of times, the conspiracy is so wild and so out there that it's just kind of a little bit believable. And people fall for it so easily.
And because so many people do, it's what I talk about in the book is social proof, right? If you begin to see something over and over and over again, you begin to think that it's real. And we've heard that in terms of if Trump is sort of saying things over and over and over again that people begin to believe, they begin to think it's true. You know, same thing with MLMs. Yeah, no, it's not. You're doing something wrong, right? It's not the MLM. The MLM, you can make money at this, but you're doing something wrong. No, but because we hear it over and over and over again, we begin to think that it's real. And it's one of the things that I talk about in the book, and because I've always had this conversation with my friends during COVID, is I think one of the reasons why QAnon took off as much as it did was because people didn't have the other socializing agents to tell them you're crazy. So if, you know, Joe, crazy Joe, is like listening to all this QAnon stuff online. And then he went into the office. And then the people in the office were like, what the heck are you talking about? That's nuts. Then he wouldn't say it because all of a sudden he would be like, oh, well, yeah, maybe there isn't something right here. But nobody had that pushback to tell them that something was wrong.
And it's interesting because sort of the same similar effect happened with people in their MLMs and their cults when they weren't getting the indoctrination that they needed, right? They weren't indoctrinating themselves like some of the people that are reading this QAnon conspiracy stuff and indoctrinating themselves all the time. They're hoping that someone else will indoctrinate them. And when they aren't able to go to their churches, their meetings, hang out with maybe toxic friends, they're unindoctrinating themselves and they're realizing, maybe I don't really need this stuff. And so many people like had the exact opposite sort of effect with MLM in not being indoctrinated like that. So it's very interesting that those two things are sort of different, but exactly the same and had the same sort of timeline of like, I'm not getting anybody else's opinion, so this must be true, versus I'm not getting anybody else's opinion, maybe I should look for other opinions.
Right. Well, this gets into when you talk about the specific things that cults do in order to be able to recruit people. So first and foremost, what cults do is they look for people when they are most vulnerable. And I'm sure folks who got sucked into an MLM feel exactly the same way. And it's one of the reasons why this issue of shame really is misplaced, because anybody could get pulled into an MLM and anybody could get pulled into a cult. And we have this belief that we're too smart, we could never get pulled into one. It doesn't have anything to do with how smart you are. It has to do with you being in a vulnerable space in your life and somebody getting to you at that particular point in time. And so that's a key part of the recruiting process. So if you want to think about it, it's beginning of the school year and college students go off to school and it's the first time a lot of them are away from home and they don't have their social groups yet. And so somebody comes up and talks to them and says, oh, I have this great place where you could go meet a bunch of people. And the next thing you know, you've been sucked into Scientology or whatever it is. And then the next part of that process is also then to give you some information, but not all of the information, just enough information to sort of entice you. Then by the time you've been sucked into the group, that's when they'll pivot and actually tell you who they really are. But by that point, you are so far gone that it is much harder, almost impossible for you to leave. Because by that point, you've been love bombed, right? And this happens in MLMs. They tell you how wonderful you are, how great you are at social media. You'd be a great salesperson. And cults would say, oh, you're really beautiful. You're really smart. You're really intelligent. You're a great salesperson. All of those kinds of things. And then once they've brought you in, separated you from anybody who might tell you that what you're doing is wrong or somehow misplaced, by that point, the only family or connection or community you have is the people who are in the cult or the MLM. And then it becomes really hard to leave. And so those two things just absolutely parallel each other. And to your point about the digital space, when we used to think about cults, now I'm old enough to remember Charles Manson and Jim Jones and all of those folks. And I've been studying cults since I'm 13. I'm like one of these crazy kids who just, like, I read every book about cults from the time I was 13 years old. So before the online space, right, when there was Jim Jones and Charles Manson, they had to put somebody onto a compound. That was the only way to separate people from the people who would tell them something was wrong. But the digital technology does that for the groups now. And that's all about advertising and marketing, right? And this is where the cults and the marketing stuff comes all together, because the digital technology is trying to sell us advertising. The way they sell us advertising is by put us into silos that have the same sort of belief systems. And so what happens now with cults and MLMs is they don't have to find, you know, Rajneesh, who had the compound in Oregon, right, or Washington State or wherever the heck that was. You don't need that anymore. The digital space does it for you.
Like, as you were speaking, I was like, oh my God, yes. Like, Facebook groups are digital compounds.
Exactly right. Yeah. And they're really dangerous. And don't get me started on Mark Zuckerberg and how he's turned that platform. It's just like a bedlam.
It's very interesting to think of not all Facebook groups.
No, of course not.
But a lot of Facebook groups as digital compounds, right? Especially a lot of Facebook groups are private. So you have to join to get in. You have to answer questions and abide by a set of rules, and they can kick you out for any reason, which I understand. Some of the Facebook groups are a little culty, but some of them I completely understand. I've managed a Facebook group. It's kind of a lot. So having rules makes sense. But like, some of these Facebook groups are so private that they're hidden that you couldn't even search for them. Like, you have to be sent a link to join because it's completely hidden and private. And it adds an extra level of protection and another shroud of like, well, I don't, you know, like, it's a secret thing. Nobody can join it unless we want them in. And I mean, I've already thought this, but sitting here talking to you and sort of connecting the dots, I'm like, okay. I was pretty on base with some of these things I was thinking. Okay.
Well, I mean, and some of it is too, when you think about just, you know, you want to create a group. You want to create a group of people who have a shared thought. It's not that every time you create a group that it becomes a cult. And that's one of the things I want to say too, is people start talking about, well, then everything's a cult. No, not everything's a cult. There are particular things that are in place for something to be a cult and something not to be a cult. Now, one of the things that I do argue in the book that's a little bit different from other people is people say, oh, but what about a cult leader? What about, you know, there has to be a cult leader. We have so internalized what we need to do and not do because of the consumer marketplace that that cult leader doesn't need to be external. Just think about weight loss. Think about it in terms of weight loss and what you think you need to weigh and what you think you need to look like and how small a size you're going to be. That's not a cult leader telling you that. That's years of consumer culture telling you that you're supposed to be a size two. And if you're not, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah. Toxic diet culture is the idol that you're worshiping in that cult. There is no leader. It's an idol. I also like to argue, and I am a Swiftie, and so I argue this, and I've had conversations with Daniela about this as well, because we both agree that, yes, there is a subset of Swifties that are super culty, but Taylor Swift is not their leader. Taylor Swift is the icon that they worship, but it's not the same as her being like, they're eating the dogs and sort of causing this outside stuff, right? I mean, she could maybe do more to stop some of that stuff. And I agree on that too. But I do not believe that she is the cult leader of the Swifties. I think she is their icon and their idol.
And this gets to what is the definition of a cult? Because, you know, one of the things I did when I wrote the book is I sent it out to a couple of different people who are religion scholars. Because, you know, I sent it out to marketing people, I sent it out to advertising and marketing professors, but I also sent it out to religion professors. And I said, okay, what am I getting right and what am I getting wrong in this? And one of the things that one person said to me, who happens to be the chair of the religion department at Yale, so she knows of what she speaks. The idea that we have of what a cult is from a limited time period from like the 1970s, 80s, 90s, when people thought of Jim Jones, when people thought of Charles Manson and Heaven's Gate and all of those kinds of things. Back in the 17th century, what a cult was simply valorizing a person or an ideology. So it was looking up to them, but it wasn't being sucked into all that it is. And what happened is people started to think about it as this all-encompassing ideology, lifestyle, charismatic cult leader, and all of those kinds of things. And now what has happened, I would say, in the last 10 to 15 years or so, is we're sort of moving back to the more broad definition of what a cult is. And because of that, we can begin to apply it to a lot more areas and a lot more ideas.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. I'm also very curious, because even talking about Taylor Swift and talking about these cult spaces and talking about marketing and advertising and everything, and you mentioned sort of the next step in that pipeline is influencers and the way that influencers come in. So when I think of sort of the scandals that we've seen with influencers recently and these sort of cult-like things, I think of Butterfly Farm. I think of like the Ruby Frankie.
I don't know what is Butterfly Farm. I don't know what that is.
Oh, she's like a trad wife.
Oh, okay.
Influencer.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. And it's this sort of thing where you are worshiping these people and you're seeing just the shiny, glossy, glittery, what they want you to see, and not any of the really gross, bad stuff. And we know like trad wives are not as glitzy and glamorous as they're portrayed to be, right? There's a lot of control, a lot of toxic masculinity and patriarchy behind a lot of these accounts. But I also, one of the things that drives me really crazy, and this goes into the MLM too, it's when influencers, especially TikTokers, and I know you're on TikTok too, so maybe you also see this, but there's a lot of big influencers. And I'm thinking of one specifically right now that I've seen that joined an MLM and is doing fabulously well because she's an influencer and she goes live and everybody just really loves to watch her open up the rings and the fizzies and all these things. And she's made videos about how I have a big following and MLMs are dangerous, but like she still participates in it. And I've talked to other people who are like, I didn't want to join and have a team because I didn't like the scammy aspect of it. But the other side of that coin is you make it look so fun and so appealing and so easy. And I would love to join your team. But since you're not building a team, I'm going to join someone else's team. So even these caveats of like, it's a lot of work. I have millions of followers. Like, you are not me. People still will believe that they can be, because who really truly believes that they're average? Everybody believes that they're made for more, that they're bigger, that they're better. And so the average doesn't mean anything to them. I'm not average. I'm better than average. I'm going to succeed. And even with the caveat of it's hard, you make it look so beautiful and so amazing, and your dreams just start going, right? And your own mind is like, and then when I do this, I'm going to buy this house. I'm going to get this car. And this is the way that I'm going to retire my husband. And you start just like living wildly in your head with nobody to say, whoa, pump the brakes. And you join these MLMs. For me, like the influencers that are even saying, oh, don't do this. Like, you're still creating this fantastic world that people are going to want to do it even if you tell them not to. And that's still influencing.
There's a wonderful book called How Not to Get Paid for What You Love by Brooke Duffy. And it's all about influencers. She, you know, worked with influencers and did an ethnography following influencers for years. And she sort of pulls back the curtain to say, people do all of this work and they're not making any money doing this. And she talks about it as aspirational labor. It's aspirational labor, which I love. It's a great term. Because what it is that you constantly are working. And maybe you'll get paid a little bit of money from TikTok, but most people aren't making a ton of money from these platforms. But it's the myth that has been created around this idea that you can very easily become an influencer. I can't tell you how many students I have every semester who tell me they want to be an influencer as their fallback. As their fallback. I'm like, do you know how much work it is to be an influencer? And that whole idea of what you were talking about making it look easy, is part of the whole toolkit of aspirational labor. Because the more that you can make it look easy to people, the more that they will be willing to try and become an influencer. I talk about how people are paid by each of the platforms and where they make money, and how that influences the kind of content that gets made. I do a big piece on Mr. Beast and why Mr. Beast is so successful, and why is he so successful and other people aren't. I also spent a lot of time talking to marketers who work with influencers. If you break it down, most influencers make their money from brand deals. And that's another crazy thing, right? Because the whole point of an influencer is to be authentic. And how are you authentic if you are shilling for a corporation? So trying to find that balance between being an authentic influencer and taking money from a corporation who's trying to get you to say something that they want you to say is a very, very delicate balance. But most of the money comes from brand deals. And what's happening is that marketers are saying that they either want to work with the Mr. Beast high-end celebrity folks on the one end, or they want to work with the nano folks on the other end. And that vast middle of people, they're getting to the point where they're really not interested in working with them anymore. And so that's a whole group of people that are going to be, you know, lost in terms of what they're going to do. And then you have the coaching thing.
Oh, God. Coaching and courses. Ah!
I just had somebody contact me on LinkedIn and asked me if I was interested in doing a course. And I said, no, I only teach in person. And he said, well, would you be interested? I said, no. I said, my whole brand is about not selling things to people. That's my whole brand. He goes, oh, well, good for you.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God. I love that.
I mean, I'm in a strange, delicate place where I don't consider myself an influencer. I know that I do influence people, and that's great, but I don't consider myself an influencer. I even hate calling myself a content creator. I'm a podcaster. I'm an advocate. I'm an activist. Money was not the motivation for me getting into any of this. Money became the way that I'm able to do this all the time. And that was like, oh my gosh, okay, let's talk about this. And I even went into this for years and years and years making free content and saying, I don't feel like my content is worth getting paid yet. Like, I'm not there yet. No, thank you. I'm not interested. Until I got to the point where I was like, I'm putting in a ton of hours. People are messaging me, asking me to do all this other stuff. I want to look into this. And then I went into it very open-eyed. I talk to a lot of people. I talk to other podcasters. I talk to, do you like your agency? Do you like the brands that you work with? What is going on? Because I knew that I needed to be authentic. And I do have to walk that tightrope of like, yes, obviously I do promote brands, but on the back end, a lot of people don't see. I mean, I turn down a lot of stuff because I'm like, this just doesn't vibe with me. I wouldn't use this product. I'm not interested in it. It's a diet thing or it's a mental health thing and I'm not interested. And so I'm very, very aware and conscious, but I also still am part of that, I don't know, microcosm of being an influencer because I do work with brands and things like that. And you're right. Making content on TikTok and Instagram, it pays bupkis. Sometimes, some months, it's like, we've got a new thing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, $1,200. This was great. I can pay for Christmas and not have to worry about things. And then the next month, it's like 8 cents. I'm like, what did I do differently? Right. What did I do that's thousands of dollars different this month than last month? And to me, to be perfectly honest, I had to just say, I have to do what's best for me, right? And Katy Perry at the VMAs was like, go outside, touch grass, step away from social media. And that's what I've done. I'm on social media when I need to be. It's a community-driven thing. I'm not an influencer. I work with brands that I like. I try to be authentic. I try to do things that like people that are looking for, help people get out, get a good deal, whatever. And I still feel sometimes inauthentic, even with everything that I'm doing to maintain my authenticity. And so when I see these influencers just jumping into MLMs or jumping into courses or jumping into coaching, I'm just like, what are you doing to your entire brand? Why are you imploding everything for possibly nothing? Why? I do not understand it. And I think maybe it just comes down to like, I don't know, just being a good person. I don't know. I don't want to call myself a good person, but you know what I mean? Like, I don't know where that line is where you flip that switch and you don't go back. Like, I'm not sure where that is. I stay very far from that line. So I really don't know where it is, but it's very concerning to see that happen.
Part of the reason I went on to TikTok is because I teach media studies. And so I wanted to better understand it. But I also did it because I've been working in deceptive marketing and not teaching people how to do it, but how to understand it and to see it. So which is always interesting to say I'm an expert in deceptive marketing. But my North Star is about giving people agency in consumer culture. How do I give people power against the marketplace when marketers have billions and billions of dollars that they are using to get you to buy things that you may not need or can't afford? And so I write about it. I've been writing about this stuff for 20 years, but I also know that there's a whole audience of people who are never going to read my books, and that's fine. But I want them to have the information, and a good way for them to be able to give the information is for me to just talk about it on TikTok. And so I've actually been surprised by how many people have been interested in what it is that I have to say. And I'm glad. And I'm, you know, I'm thrilled to death. I'm just beyond that. That's what happened.
If you have young kids like me, a new year is another chance to do all of the amazing things that you didn't get to do the year before. That epic family trip, an incredible themed party, checking off a bucket list item, or dare I say it, another year closer to getting a phone. With the power of phones today, when it was time to get Abby one, I was pretty nervous about it. I have to be chronically online for my job, and I've seen some of the worst when it comes to content that comes across kids' feeds. Luckily, with Gab, there's a less nerve-wracking way. No social media apps, no internet browser, and GPS tracking. Gab devices were built specifically to keep kids and teens safely connected. They are the leader in safe phones and watches for kids, teens, and tweens, and it's easy to see why. As a parent, the Gab Companion app is a lifesaver. With parental controls, message monitoring, safe zones, and usage logs, you can manage their devices and monitor their location without ever having to bother them. And on Abby's watch, focus mode comes in handy when she's prepping and studying for not only school, but all of her extracurriculars too. Right now, Gab is offering $25 off any device with no contract required. Just go to gab.com/MLM to get started. That's Gab, GABB.com/MLM. Gab.com/MLM. Terms and conditions apply. I don't know if you know this or not, but our laundry room is in our basement. It's down a tight flight of stairs that freaks me out even when I'm not taking down heavy loads of dirty clothes with me. Switching out our heavy, big box store-sized plastic tubs and bottles for our EarthBreeze eco-friendly plastic-free envelopes has eliminated not only extra weight heading down those stairs, but also cuts down on our plastic waste. We are a house that recycles, and you'd think that those bottles would be easily recyclable, but 500 million of them end up in landfills and oceans every single year. That alone is an incredible incentive to switch to EarthBreeze laundry sheets. It's an easy way to get amazingly clean clothes without all that plastic waste, delivered right to your door. Get 40% off EarthBreeze when you sign up for auto shipments at earthbreeze.com/MLM. That's earthbreeze.com/MLM.
Those type of accounts, like yours, like mine, like Daniela's, I can think of all kinds of people. Most of them are either educators in the cult space or cult survivors themselves, telling stories, being authentic, asking questions, breaking down misconceptions, helping people understand really big concepts and making it very simple to consume. Those are my favorite. I don't care about the latest TikTok dance. I don't care about the filters or the whatever the games. It's fun. If that's what people want to do, great. But for me, I find the most value when I can watch somebody and connect with them and go, yes, this is what I was feeling. And they're putting it into a language I can understand. I'm not crazy. It validates me, validates my experience. It makes me feel like I have a better understanding of what's going on around me. And honestly, if I come across any kind of account, whether it be political, whether it be like education, deceptive marketing, cult, whatever, if you can grab me and teach me something in the first 2 minutes, it's an instant follow. I'm like, boom, why have I not been following this person already? It's just, it's such valuable and needed content. And then I also see those same exact people who are like, my videos are being suppressed. They're not letting me talk about this one issue. My videos keep getting deleted. They keep getting taken down for bullying. And to me, that's the sign that they're saying and doing, quote, the right thing, because there's a bigger entity out there that's trying to silence them. So those are the influencers that I love to follow. The ones that are selling things, not as much.
Yeah. And to this point, I mean, I interviewed a couple of corporate marketing people at MLMs who all talked off the record. They all talked off the record and they have a lot to say. Some of them also do the, it's not the MLM I work for, but that other MLM, that one's really bad, bad kind of thing. But they are acutely aware that the anti-MLM movement is fundamental to the destruction of their industry. They know that this has been successful. And one of the things that I talk about is if people want to talk about, you know, breaking the cult of Trump or whatever it is, look to the anti-MLM movement as a case study, because it is what John Jelalich, who is, you know, the cult expert. I love this metaphor that she uses of a bookshelf. That there's a bookshelf that exists and that there's increasing amount of cognitive dissonance, right? That something in your brain just feels off. It's not right. It doesn't align with your ethics or your belief system. And so what happens is you have the bookshelf and something happens. One book goes on and that doesn't make sense. And another book goes on and that doesn't make sense, to the point where the books just break the shelf and you go away. And that's what's happened. And this is the case, actually, what's really interesting is that the algorithms worked in your favor, because when people started looking for MLMs, they started getting the anti-MLM content in their feeds as well. And so as they started to see more and more of the anti-MLMs movement, which I'm, you know, you've talked about with people here, the more anti-MLM content they began to see, the more they started thinking, this doesn't make sense to me anymore. And so you can kind of see a parallel, you know, politically, and I don't know how political you want to get, but it has been happening over time that people are being given the permission structure to walk away from him. You're not walking away from the Republican Party because the Republican Party, as we know it, doesn't exist anymore. I think for some people, not all, but for some people, it might be enough for that bookshelf to finally break.
Yeah. I hear a lot about the shelf analogy, especially in like evangelical Christianity and like Mormonism, that they have this shelf in the back of their mind where they put things on the shelf, you know, oh, we're not going to talk about that. We're going to put it on our shelf. And so many of these influencers are like, oh, my shelf was bending. It was sagging and it still wouldn't break.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's very interesting to see that here too, because it's true, right? There's only so much you can put up with. There's only so much that you can deny. There's only so much that you can excuse till your shelf breaks. It's the straw on the camel's back. It's the last book on the shelf. It's the, this is the final, I can't do this anymore. My hands are up.
Right.
I don't care.
Right. What was that? Do you mind me asking? What was that for you?
Okay. So in LuLaRoe, I started noticing all these weird things, right? And people were like, I'm not making money and this is, but it wasn't my experience. So I would try to help them and say, well, this is what I'm doing and this is what's worked. And if I noticed things were different, I would, this is how I shifted it. And this is what I'm focusing on now. And it would help, you know, they're little band-aids. They help for a little bit. When things started happening specifically to me from LuLaRoe, right? And there was no one for me to really talk to because everybody that I talked to that was an upline was giving me the same sort of advice that I had given. We'll try this. We'll try that. And I was like, no, okay. I've already tried that. I had tried everything. And it really came down to me understanding how a business is run as a business owner because I had been a hairstylist for so long and had worked with brands and had worked with reps when things didn't work. And so every time that I had reached out to LuLaRoe to be like, this is an obvious, you know, thing, like we can fix it. Here's some ideas to fix it. Here's like six different ways that we can fix this very simple problem. And it always came back with like, oh, I don't know. I started to realize I didn't know it was a pyramid scheme. I didn't know that it was technically a scam or a cult or anything like that. I just knew it wasn't a business.
Right. Interesting.
I was like, this isn't how a business would run. This is not how a business would handle this. It almost felt like they were trying to get me to leave. Like they were treating me so bad that they were just like, she's too squeaky. Like, just let her go. Just let her go. And it was that moment where I was like, this is definitely not a business.
Interesting.
And then leaving and just saying, I got to get out of this. Once I left and I did not have that community that was, you know, filling me with the confirmation bias. And I could sit down and watch like Leah Remini and I could read Ponzinomics and I could figure out who all these people were. And I go, oh, like you, the same. You're like, oh, people have already figured this out. I'm not the first one.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't plant the flag. There's other things for me to look into. So I just started looking into things. And I think within 3 months, because I left in September and it was like by the end of the year, I was like, this is a pyramid scheme cult. And all of MLMs are like this because I had gone to Reddit and I'd be like, this was my experience. And people are like, I was with Scentsy and that happened to me. Or I was with Unique and you literally just described my experience. And then I started going, oh, and then I took a step out, right? And I was like, what else is there? And then even to what you're saying, when you start to see it in one space, and I really do think because so many people have experience with MLM, right? Not a lot of people have experience being in a big cult like Manson or Jonestown or Heaven's Gate or anything like that. They only know what they see on the news or what they watch in TV shows, documentaries, whatever. They don't have the experience. But they do have an MLM experience. It's like every single person I talk to, they're like, oh my God, like Avon, my mom's old Avon. Like every time. I have not met anybody that doesn't have a story. And so when you can put yourself in the epicenter of something that's so dastardly and go, I can connect to those feelings, that emotion, that, oh yeah, they did that to me. And then you can take a step back. You're like, oh, this is kind of like how it was in my church. Oh, this is kind of like how it was in my weird culty business, like the company I worked for that didn't like. Oh, this is kind of like how it was in Manson. Like what? Now this all connects. And if you can go to that very small place, like the MLM, and work backwards, that's why so many people come to me and they go, I just saw this course. Is it an MLM? And I'm like, no, but it's adjacent and you're on the right track. You're seeing the red flags. You're feeling the emotions. You're saying, my anxiety is telling me that this is dangerous. And though it's not an MLM, it is MLM's next door neighbor. And so people are starting to see all of these red flags so much easier because of the work that you do, I do, other communities do. And it's just been like, holy shit. And I think that's where we get such a great movement where the MLMs are scared, where the FTC listens to this show and goes, hey, Roberta, you know, like there are people that are important that are listening. There are people that know what we're doing. There are people that are scared. They have mentioned us, our documentaries, our podcasts, our interviews in their DSA newsletters. They know we're here.
Wow. Wow. See, that's great. That's great. The other reason why this is going on is because we talked about digital before. And the whole idea within the digital framework and the influencer framework is this idea that everybody can be an entrepreneur, that the gig economy and the everybody's supposed to have a side hustle and all of that. And what all of that does is let corporate America off the hook from giving people the salary that they deserve, that they can work one job and be able to pay for their family and their homes. And that's also one of the things that I talk about and fight for, because that's a Silicon Valley thing. Them giving people an idea that everybody should be an entrepreneur, everybody should be a freelancer. You know, it just, the idea that everybody should do this or could do this is just so, so bizarre if you stop to think about it. I'm not an entrepreneur. I'm somebody who wants a job with a salary. I think most people do. When you talk about what the middle class was like in the United States in the 1970s, the vast majority of people had a job that, you know, they might not have been the most interesting job, but you could work at a factory and make a living and send your kid to college and go on a vacation once a year and have a home. And why in the midst of all of this stuff do we not? And so when I talk to my students and say, yeah, there are people that I worked with at MTV that are still there 30 years later, or people worked at IBM for 30 years. That is so far outside the realm of their understanding. And I would like to put that back into the message and into people's understanding that corporations shouldn't be saying that you are only a freelancer and they shouldn't be underpaying you. You should get what you deserve and you should be able to work one job and have a salary. And maybe if you're a two-person household, so that, you know, both of you need to work and able to do that. Okay, fine. That's where we are. But you shouldn't have to work six jobs in order to be able to do that.
And I don't think that you should have to commodify your hobbies either. I don't think that you should have to say, I love to knit and it's the way that I de-stress while I watch my true crime. But now I'm going to sell all my knitting. And so now I'm going to have to knit a lot more. And now knitting kind of isn't my fun thing anymore. I kind of hate it and I don't want to do this anymore. And you take away the joy in your life by deciding that it's a job. A job shouldn't be, I mean, some people's jobs are fun. My job's pretty fun. But a job should still be work, right? You should still be like, oh, I got to get this done and not like, oh, it's so fun. So commodifying your hobbies, it takes away your joy and your pleasure. And then like you're saying, well, a corporation's like, oh, I'm not going to pay you enough. So you should probably get a side hustle. Like, no. No, it's their responsibility to pay you, not their responsibility to help you find a second job. That's ridiculous.
But then they look for it on your resume, right? What else have you done?
What else have you done?
Right. So when students go to get a job at an advertising agency, the agencies will, I'm not kidding you, look at the numbers on their socials. They want to know that they have a following on their socials. You know, as somebody starting out working for an advertising agency, like, are you kidding? No, that's not, it's not up to them in their space to sell your company for you. No.
Right. That's so odd. It really is odd. So we've got this pipeline from the brand cults to the culty influencers into this conspiracy.
Yes.
And then into MLM.
Correct.
So let's talk about conspiracy to MLM and really what gets people like believing from that step into MLM as the answer for them.
What happens in, and look, when I talk about the spectrum, I'm not necessarily saying that people are moving from one thing to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing, but that as you move along the spectrum, you have increased anxiety and increased overlap between brands and marketing. Also, one of the things that I argue in the book is that, you know, people, economists have talked about the fact that we're living in an attention economy. And what I say is that we're living in an anxiety economy. Because it's the anxiety that gets us so ramped up that we will keep holding onto our phone and then going back to our phone to find some other content that will help to relieve the anxiety and the stress that's been caused by us spending time on the phone. So it becomes this unending cycle, which is really kind of crazy.
I see that though. I really do see that because I'll like scroll and then I'll start to kind of feel that anxiety and I'll stop scrolling and I'll go to my messages and then I'll talk to my friends for a bit and then I'll go back to the scrolling, you know, and it's like, stress me out, calm me down, stress me out, calm me down, stress me out, calm me down. It's this really weird cycle that I'm like, it's late. I should probably go to bed.
But the technology is set up for you to do that. Because if you think about, there is no natural stopping point. It's called endless scroll. There is no natural stopping point when you're scrolling in social media. When you read a book, you read a book. At the end of the book, you close it up and you're done. If you watch a film, the film comes to an end. You close the film and you're done. You know, you close the app and you're done. There's no natural stopping point on social media. And that's on purpose.
I remember a few years ago on TikTok, and I haven't seen it in a really long time, so I'd love if anybody has seen this recently to comment and let me know. But I remember a few years ago, before TikTok became the marketplace that it is today, the QVC generation, I would be scrolling and you would get a random like ad. It was a TikTok ad basically. And it was like, hey, you should probably put your phone down, stop scrolling and take a break. We used to see those all the time. And I'd be like, shut up, I'm scrolling. And you swipe by. I have not seen a TikTok employee tell me to put my phone down and stop scrolling in years.
There's a reason why. It's called enshittification.
Enshittification?
Enshittification. This was a word that was created by Cory Doctorow. And what he talks about it is it's the natural progression of a social media platform. And what happens is, right, bear in mind, none of these platforms make content. So what's the first thing they need to do? They need to bring in as many content creators as possible and make the space as nice for them as they possibly can. And so they, you know, give money to the creators, they set it up so and teach them how to use the platform, all of those kinds of things. Then they have to bring in, once that's good, then they have to bring in other users, right? So people not necessarily who are creating content, but just spend time on the space so that they build up the space so that there's a huge audience. All of this is in the service of advertisers. So then they need to bring the advertisers on board who have then seen that there is enough of an audience in the social media space for them to want to put their money down. And then that's when it pivots to be about being for the advertiser and no longer for the creators and the people. And anybody who's been on TikTok recently, and I know you're going to nod your head, it has become all about the ad at the beginning, the sponsored content, the lives, right? And all of that is about selling advertising to marketers. And so it becomes unpleasant for the people who used to be on there and really liked it as a place to find community, to share ideas and all of that. And that is enshittification.
Oh my God. It's total enshittification. Let me tell you my least favorite TikTok shop product. Can I tell you about it?
Yes, please do.
I see this all the time. I actually started taking screenshots of the ridiculous things being sold on TikTok shop. And we're recording this in September. So it might not be this by the time we listen to this in December. It might be something else. But right now, it is this cheap, ridiculous dresser. Have you seen this dresser? It's like a basic, they're like, it's steel frame. I don't trust that it's a steel frame. It's like a metal frame that you build, right? It comes in like a flat package that you build, like IKEA style. The drawers are fabric with like a fake wood finish on the front. So if you look at the dresser, it looks like a wooden dresser, but the drawers are fabric. And when we talk about like the disingenuous advertising and the deception in advertising, there are people in these live comments, because I like to watch, this is my favorite. I love to watch the chaos when someone comes in and says, those drawers are fabric drawers. And then the person is like, well, I mean, da-da-da. And they're just saying they can hold 5 pounds each. And I was like, dude, I have dresses that weigh more than 5 pounds. And they're putting TVs on top saying, you can put a TV on this dresser. And it's great for a baby nursery. You can put diapers in that. You can put tiny little baby clothes. You can put little things. It's great for a baby nursery or a craft room. But these people are showing these fabric dressers, okay, fabric, in a bedroom with a TV on top like mine and saying, look at this. It's so good. The deal is so good. I bought two. And I was like, what are you doing? Why do we need this bullshit? It's bullshit. It's junk. It's crap. The dresser is only like $40. That's your first red flag that an 18 drawer dresser is $40. It's a piece of shit. And there are people in the comments saying, I bought this. The drawers ripped. The metal bent. I threw it away in 4 weeks. Like, it was not worth it. And the advertisers are like, well, I don't know. I really love it. I just bought more. And I'm like, you guys are fucking liars. And I'm watching this happen in real time. And people are just getting blocked for being honest. And I'm like, this is like MLM again. Like, this is the same, like, you, no negativity.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, it's not negativity when someone's saying the drawers are fabric. They're fabric drawers. So that's my least favorite. I do not suggest buying one. My dud of the week.
Yeah. Well, you know, everybody, and nobody's talking about it now. TikTok made me buy it. Like, TikTok, I don't think is making anybody buy anything. And that's part of what I argue in there. And it's there. No, TikTok's not making anybody buy anything right now.
Right. But even back in the day, before the ridiculousness of TikTok Shop and before all of the sponsored and commissioned posts, people would be like, this is something that TikTok actually made me buy. Because somebody was talking about it. It's called Magic Molecule. It's like a spray to help with. It's an antimicrobial skin cleanser. And it was either TikTok or Instagram where I saw it. And I was like, I'm going to check that out. And I love it. And I've bought it multiple times. I think it's fantastic. But it wasn't like a QVC style live where they're like, buy this. It's on sale right now. Check the thing. Here's my coupon code. And so TikTok, quote, whoever the influencer was or whoever the person that was talking about it. And it wasn't a big influencer. It was probably someone I just follow. They encouraged me to try it. But I miss the days of, oh my God, TikTok made me buy it, because now it's this like QVC live. Like, you can't even scroll. Every other video is a TikTok Shop video. My daughter, who's 13, was scrolling and she was like, Mom, check it out. She's like, every third video is an ad. And she's like, scroll, ad. I was like, dude. She's like, I know. Isn't that wild? My 13-year-old noticed it.
Right. But good that she noticed it. I think that's it's really important. I mean, one of the things that I did with my daughter, now my daughter's almost 25 now, but, you know, and a lot of this wasn't around when she was growing up, but I would sit down with her and watch TV with her. And not true, but true. I would just say ads lie, advertising lies. Work under the assumption that advertising lies. And you can go from there. But at least, you know, at least if kids are understanding that the advertising is there and they need to look for it, that's what's really important. But you were talking before, you asked me about conspiracy theories, like how does influencers to conspiracy theories? A lot of this happened during COVID, and this gets into the whole conspirituality issue, which is the combination of spirituality and conspiracy theories. And this was particularly rampant in the healthcare and yoga community. What's kind of fundamental to conspirituality is this new age ethos that, you know, there's going to be a change in the world if we change our mind, and we need to clean ourselves up first, and then the rest of the world will be made better. And a lot of that has to do with doing your own research. Have we heard this before? And so you began to have this sort of combination of people who had sort of new age ideas and philosophies getting kind of drafted into some of these right-wing conspiracy theories and QAnon, and especially when QAnon started using the hashtag Save the Children, that these influencers started pivoting into these crazy kinds of conspiracy theories. And what happens with the people that follow them, two things that happen. One, we often find that people who make this pivot from sort of calm, you know, yoga, you know, crunchy granola kind of content to then doing this rage-filled conspiracy theory kinds of stuff, all of a sudden their numbers go shooting through the roof, which goes to what we were talking about before, which is the more anger, the more anxiety, the more rage that you can produce in your content, the longer people will spend online. And the more money can be sold to, you know, more advertising can be sold, the more money that the platform can make. So all of this is being done at the expense of our mental health and the mental health of our kids. And now, don't get me wrong, I am not Jonathan Haidt. I don't believe in his book, The Anxiety Generation. I think it's bad research. It's badly done. He's a social psychologist, and that's where he should stay in his lane. He doesn't talk to people who work in media studies, and he doesn't even need to talk to me. Talk to Dana Boyd, talk to any of these other people, but the research that he uses in that book is 10 or 15 years old. Don't buy it. That's my rant about that. But what I will say is that it is social media can be used in a healthy way, and it can be used in a healthy way for adults as well as for kids. And what has been going on, certainly for Gen Z, is they have lived in what's known as a permacrisis. And that is, their lives have been one social crisis after another social crisis after another social crisis. So you can't talk about social media being a problem without talking about the fact that they have never lived their lives without knowing about September 11th and the fallout from that. They have never lived their lives without the recession of 2008. They have never lived their lives without understanding the issues of climate change. They have never lived their lives without having to do shooter drills in their elementary schools. So you can't talk about all that stuff and then blame social media for the mental health crisis that's going on with our kids. It can't be extricated in that way. And, you know, if, since you have a 13-year-old, I'm sure you see that, you know, that's a way for them to engage with their friends. They're communicating with each other. And certainly during COVID, those devices were a godsend for a lot of kids. You know, there's certainly issues, but it's also was a way for them to stay in touch with their friends and to continue to socialize with people in a way they wouldn't have been able to before. So like everything, it's balance. It's about balance. I'm sorry, I don't mean to be such a downer, but I think it's really important to say. I think it's important to put all of this into perspective and to, you know, in the end of the book and give tips for what you can do in order to be able to make sure that you stay healthy and whole around this. There's something to be said for Sabbath or a Shabbat for social media. That's just like one day a week. You don't have to give it up. You don't have to give it up. One day a week, because that one day a week helps you to reset. It helps you to see the places where you are getting out of balance. It's about finding the balance for yourself.
I completely agree. It's about finding the balance. And what's so interesting that you brought up that this generation hasn't lived through any of those disasters and really doesn't know a life before all of the restrictions that came after these things. My daughter called me the other day. She's at her dad's house and she says, "Mom, I have to interview you for a project. Can I interview you?" And I was like, "Yeah, of course." And she's like, "I want to ask you about 9/11 and where you were and what it was and how it was." And I'm thinking like, it's been 23 years, right? And she was asking me all these different questions. She's asking me what like airports were like and what crossing the border was like, because we're in San Diego. All of the things before 9/11. And she was like, "Whoa, what? Really?" I was like, "Yes." And it was really cool to have that conversation with her and to have her ask me questions about it and to have her like understand and to learn about a time in life where we'll never go back to that point. And it's wild to me because that's such a norm for me to remember the before and the after, but she's only ever known the after and to have that conversation.
Right. This is going to tell you how old I am. Do you remember the show HR Puffin Stuff?
Yes, but I was very little. Yeah.
I loved that show, HR Puffin Stuff. And at the end of the show, the guy who was this British guy who I had a complete and utter crush on, looked at the camera and said, well, see you next week. And so I went to because I loved it so much, I went to the library and got the VHS tape to show it to my daughter. And she looked at it and she said, "What do you mean next week?" And I had to explain to her that she would have to be sitting in front of a TV at a specific time. And if she didn't see it then, she wasn't going to see it that week. Like the idea that she wouldn't be able to watch SpongeBob at any time of the day at night when she wanted to watch SpongeBob, I thought her brain was going to explode.
Right? It's the same like with the old Batman. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right.
It's like, what? Oh, streaming didn't exist. I get it. Yeah. It's so funny.
It's a very different mindset. It's a different world that these kids are growing up in. And they're, you know, and look, there's good and bad and all of that stuff. I think a lot of it, you know, I talk about in the book a little bit about QAnon. I talk about Alex Jones. Alex Jones is like a really interesting guy. I don't know if you've gotten into that, but talking about making money. He doesn't make money from like websites and all of that kind of stuff. He makes his money selling vitamins like for old white guys, like Viral vitamins for old white guys. That's where this dude is making his money. So I guess there's sort of an MLM twist in there somewhere.
An MLM for boner pills. Got it. No offense to anybody who needs them for realsies, but...
Oh my God.
The next time you fly, upgrade your comfort to Emirates Premium Economy. Sink into soft leather seats with raised legrests and adjustable headrests. Elevate your dinner plans with delicious regional dining, all served with complimentary premium drinks. Enjoy endless entertainment with up to 6,500 channels, including live sports. There's no other premium economy like it. Fly Emirates. Fly better.
Querido invierno, Toyota no se cansa de ti, porque Toyota tiene 25 vehículos con tracción permanente en las cuatro ruedas y tracción en las cuatro ruedas, más que cualquier otra marca de autos. Hasta siempre, Toyota. Toyota, vayamos juntos. Basado en las páginas web de los fabricantes a partir del 2010-24.
Well, there's got to be something wrong with the product when Amazon takes away your rights to be able to sell it on their platform, because Amazon will sell frickin' anything.
I mean, we've learned about DSHEA and the deregulation of the FDA in the 90s at the hands of MLM. And so, it just, you know, for me, it's one of the reasons that I don't do a lot of vitamin stuff or supplement stuff. I don't know what to trust. If you don't have like peer reviews, if you don't have medical science-backed studies, if you don't have a lot of green flags in place for any of the red flags that might appear, I'm not going to touch it with a 10-foot pole. And seeing a banner on some website or hearing Alex Jones be like, what are you doing this weekend? You should order these pills. None of that really like shouts to me. I'm not a mediocre white dude. So that could be one of the main reasons. But still, I wouldn't buy the mediocre white lady pills either. Maybe 15 years ago I would have, but not today. Not today, where I've done the research, I've looked into things, I've talked to hundreds of survivors from so many different kinds of coercive control groups, that to me, especially now, just talking to you about advertising and the way that they lie, I don't trust it. And I don't need it, right? That's another thing I ask myself. I'm like, do I really need this? Would it really change my life? Would it really give me what I think I need? Or is there something else in my life that's lacking that I can get this in a much healthier, more natural way? Like just going to the beach. Do I maybe just need to go outside and get some sun, go on a hike, play with my dog? Maybe that's what I need.
Right. Well, and the thing is too, is that one of the key differences now versus, you know, so-called legacy media, you know, TV and print and so on, is there were guardrails around the advertising. You know, if I was doing an ad for Miller Beer, I had to take the script for the ad to the broadcast networks and have them approve it before we would run the ad, because we had to know that they would actually run the ad after we created it. We didn't want to spend $500,000 or $1 million on an ad and find out we weren't going to be able to air it on one of the broadcast networks, because then we'd be screwed. But ads that are put up today, there's no guardrails on this. There's no testing on, you know, whether or not what their claims they are making. And forget about it when you're talking about influencers and, you know, talking about the FTC. The amount of advertising exists just in terms of sheer tonnage. It would be impossible for them to regulate every part of it. They can't. It's just, there's just too much of it.
Yeah. And the more that we deregulate industries, the harder it will be for us to re-regulate them in the future, because the billionaires, the ones that are in control, they want that. They want to be deregulated. They don't want to have to follow rules. They want to be able to do anything they want, because you're going to buy it. It doesn't matter. We'll just fix it later with a lawsuit. You all will get an $11 check. Big deal. Slap on the wrist for us. They don't care.
Right. It's a part of doing business. It's a cost of doing business. For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It's wild.
Yeah. Well, that's why I got out of corporate. You know, you get to a point where you see a lot of research when you work in corporate, and you begin to see research about how watching a lot of television isn't really great for people, or that people aren't as happy as they used to be, or that, you know, some product or service that you're selling isn't making people's lives better. And so, you know, that was part of the reason why I got out. So, you know, people say, yeah, but you teach advertising and marketing. But I teach advertising and marketing with a critical perspective. And so my students who are going to go out in the marketplace are going to know that they're not going to work for a brand that they don't believe in. They're not going to create an ad like the stupid Jenner Pepsi ad that suggests that Pepsi is going to save the Black Lives Matter movement. You know, which is, you know, ridiculous kinds of things. They will come at it with a critical perspective in mind. And that, you know, and part of the reason why I do what I do, as I said, is to give people more agency in the marketplace. And for right now, it really is incumbent upon us to be able to do the kinds of things that you do and the kind of things that I do in order to be able to help people to see when they are being taken, because it isn't going to be the regulators that are going to do it. It isn't going to be the corporations that are going to do it, because for the corporations, it's not in their best interest to do it. They're going to do everything they can to make as much money as possible in the cheapest way possible.
Right. Yeah. So what are some of your tips when we're out there looking at brands, we're watching commercials, we're falling in love with products because, you know, it's so shiny and beautiful. What are some of the red flags that we should look out for? And what are some of the ways that we can protect ourselves from deceptive marketing?
One of the big things that I like to talk about a lot is the idea of thinking fast and slow. And that has to do with the way the technology, talk about the way the technology is for you to scroll, scroll, scroll. Not only are you scrolling, you're scrolling really fast, and you are not really paying attention to what it is that you're looking at. The technology is set up for you to think fast. Thinking fast means you're not going to think about it. You're just going to say, oh, you know, and it taps into your, you know, your cortex or whatever that is. And the next thing you know, you're buying it. What I would say to you is just stop and say, I'm thinking fast. Time for me to think slow. Do exactly what you were saying. Do I want it? Do I need it? Can I afford it? And if you say no to any of those things, you know, then don't, you know, no, I don't need it. I don't want it. No, I can't afford it. Because there's also pleasure in waiting for something. Going on a vacation is great, but the vast majority of the pleasure comes from planning the trip. Buying, you know, a great piece of furniture is going shopping, feeling the product, finding out information from people, all of those kinds of things, anticipating what it's going to look like in your room and how you're going to design it. All of that is part of what the pleasure is. So you don't want to get into that.
Yeah, it's all the dopamine of like, I need a new bed, shopping for the new bed, going to the mattress store and trying out the beds, getting it installed and sleeping in it that first night and being like, oh my God. But then you're like, oh, well, it's just a bed. Yeah, sure, it's a comfortable bed, but it's just a bed. Like, I need it. I spend a third of my life in it. Like, you need it.
Right.
But yes, all that dopamine leading up to it, telling your friends, oh, I'm shopping for a new bed. What do you guys have? What do you recommend? It's like waiting for Christmas, right? If you think about, really, I'm thinking about this right now in any sort of gift giving, the dopamine of the holiday, of buying the presents, of saying, what do you want? What do you, oh my gosh, that's so perfect for so-and-so. I got to get this for so-and-so. The dopamine of all that, the dopamine of opening up, you know, I don't know what everybody's Christmas tree looks like, but a lot of times there's lots of presents under there, big, small, and whatnot, right? And it goes by in 15 minutes. And all of a sudden you're like, Christmas is over? And you're like, oh, okay, well, I guess it's time to like make breakfast. And it's like, that was it?
Right.
That was it? All of that lead up the whole month. Oh, I can't wait for you to open your stocking. I can't wait for you to see what I got you. And then it's done and it's gone. And it's like, well, guess we'll start planning for next year. It's just, it's so formulaic. And one of the reasons that my daughter and I, again, even at the holidays, we take our time, because when we go to like grandma's house and they're playing Santa and everybody's got a gift and it's just shredding paper everywhere, nobody knows who got what. Nobody knows who to say thank you to. My daughter and I, when we have Christmas mornings together, we take our time. We'll make some breakfast, like cinnamon rolls and orange juice, and we'll sit there. And I'll say, oh, open this one. You're going to love it. And she'll open it and we'll look at it. And then she's like, oh, open this one. And we go back and forth and we take our time. We do it slowly. It's not this fast thinking of like, oh my God, cool, what's next? It really is like that slow, that understanding. Oh my gosh, where did you get this? This is perfect. You know me so well. That to me has become the dopamine of the gift giving and these sort of holidays, is the time that you take to sit and appreciate. And I didn't have that as a child. And I'm so glad that my daughter is embracing that aspect, because, you know, things, it's like flashes in the pan, right? It comes and goes so fast. And if you don't appreciate things, it's just, what's next? Okay, cool. Thank you. What's next? And I don't want to live in a what's next life. I want to enjoy the present.
Right. The other tip that I want to give people is to, there's something called the persuasion theory. And I'm not getting the exact name right, but basically how it works is this, is there's three parts to understanding how you're being sold to. And the first part of it is whether or not you know you are engaging with biased content. Do you know that it's sponsored content? And this is really key online. And it gets very confusing these days because, one, people are supposed to say that it's sponsored content and a lot of people don't. And alternatively, people who want to look like they're bigger influencers will say that it's sponsored content, even when it's not sponsored content. So it looks like they're getting brand deals, which is crazy. Taylor Lawrence talks about this in her book. So, you know, do you know that it's biased content? Do you know that it's sponsored content? Do you know who the person is giving it, you know, presenting the information? So do you really trust the influencer? And do you know the category, right? So if you're buying, I don't know, let's make something up. You're buying a new computer and you want to upgrade your computer. Maybe you're a gamer or something and you don't really know that much about it. You know a little bit about it, but not that much. But there's an influencer you've been following who's a really good gamer, has a lot of followers, you know, has given people a lot of good advice. Then you sort of lean on that. And then you know that it's sponsored. So you can say, okay, this is someone I know, but I know he's being paid to say this stuff to me. I don't know that much about the category. So, okay. So you lean on the things that you know, and those are two things that you will know. If you kind of know the category, you know the influencer, but you don't know that it's being sponsored, that's when you start to get in a down position as a consumer. And so one of the things to really look at and really try to be conscious of is this sponsored content, and can you find out whether or not it is? So, you know, if you're buying a $20 dresser, you know, that's up to you. That's on you. That's to whether or not you buy that. But if you're buying something really expensive and, you know, look, there's influencers out there that people think, oh, you know, no, she really uses this foundation. She really likes this foundation. She really loves this. Maybe, maybe not. And really take the time to find out. And don't buy it just because the influencer said. There's so many other places where you can find out information. Don't assume that the influencer that you're following doesn't have, you know, some bias behind them to present that content the way it's being presented.
You know, it's so interesting because this literally just happened to me the other day. My ad company will send me pitches, like say, hey, this brand is interested in maybe hosting some ads. Are you interested in working with them? And then I have to sort of like pitch and say, yes, this is why. Two makeup brands reached out to me. One is a makeup brand that I fucking love. And I was like, oh my God, yes, yes, yes. I love it. I own all kinds of it. It's one of my favorite makeup brands of all time. And then the other one was a celebrity-backed makeup company that I'm not a huge fan of that celebrity. And so I Googled, because one, I was like, oh, I use this. I love this. Absolutely. Yes. I would love to work with them. I hope they want to work with me too. The other one, I Googled it and I was like, da-da-da-da-da, scam. And this Reddit came up with all these people that were like, I had high hopes for this based on the celebrity. It just looks like another celebrity packaging private label. Like people were showing pictures of the brand like in Sephora with dust all over it. Like nobody's buying this. And it was so easy for me to, because I already was like, ugh. And then I saw that and was like, double. Ugh. And I literally was like, nope. And that's exactly how I felt too. And I want to feel that way because I want the people listening, if I'm going to talk about something, for them to be like, oh, Roberta really likes this. I was already thinking about it. That's another green check. Maybe I will check it out at the store, or maybe I will go and do this or get the discount or whatever. But even for me, it was like a very like green flag, green flag, green flag. And the other one was like, yellowy red flag. I don't know. And I was right on my hunches. So it's also very important to know that the influencer, quote unquote influencer, that you follow, that you trust them, that you like them, that they've maybe recommended other things that weren't sponsored that you really enjoyed. And they're like, well, she was right on the money with those other things. So I think that's also there too. And I think also for anybody who's an influencer that's listening, it's really, really important for you to understand that you have a duty to be honest and authentic to the people that are following you. Because if you don't, you will be one of those people that gets a YouTube video made about you, about how you imploded your entire brand because you weren't authentic. And nobody wants to have a YouTube made about them. So just be authentic and real. Don't take brand deals because you need the money. The right brand deal will come to you. You don't have to force something that doesn't work and makes you feel inauthentic. If you're already feeling weird and inauthentic about taking the brand deal, that should also be a really big red flag for you to maybe do your research. Google it, add scam to the end, figure out what the real... I would hate to promote something and have all of my listeners go, wait, what? Even when MLMs, because we'll have like random ads that I'm not in control of at all, that'll fill in like unsold spots. That's just how advertising works. And Beachbody keeps getting in. You guys, I know. I keep telling them, stop it. And it still comes in. And so there's part of me that's frustrated that Beachbody is putting ads on my podcast. But then there's the other part of me that's like, fine, pay me to talk shit about you, whatever. Like, I don't care. So, you know, I keep telling them, they keep somehow getting in. Thank you for letting me know, you guys. I'm well aware of this scam that's happening. I do not promote any MLM, so don't worry. That's not on me.
Yeah, I know. And this is the problem with researching this stuff, is I'm getting so much email, particularly from them. I mean, it was crazy. It's just crazy.
Oh, wow. I love to hear. I love putting pushback and like having the people you're pushing back be like, why are you pushing back on me? And you're like, do you really want to know? Because I can tell you. I think it's important to be as transparent as possible in advertising. If, you know, some brands have like a sponsored button. I had trouble with that one time promoting something. I clicked the this is a sponsored and it like didn't go through, and, you know, like not use the hashtag and then be like, screw it, and then cancel it and add the hashtag. So there's a lot of different ways that you can tell something's sponsored. It might say sponsored. They're going to have a hashtag. Maybe you have to have at least one. Some people do multiple, but it'll either be sponsored branding content like through the app, and it'll say like sponsored or something, or it'll say paid advertisement or paid participation, something like that. Or you're going to see the hashtags that are like spawn, S-P-O-N, spawn, ad, sponsored, advertising, something like that. Those are all hashtags. So if you guys are interested in trying to figure out what is and isn't sponsored, those are a couple starting points for you to look for. And then again, having a little bit of hesitation, being like, okay, you're getting paid. Is this real? Is this, do I trust you? And checking off all the boxes that you also went down to just be a more informed consumer.
You can also, that's what my last book was all about. It was a book called Black Ops Advertising. And it's about all the ways we're being marketed to that we don't know that we're being marketed to. And I get into product placement and native advertising and branded content and what all those things are and how they're used to deceive us. You don't need to buy the book. I'm sure it's in your local library. If you do want to buy it, you can probably get it on Amazon for about $10. But really, you could pick it up from your local library. And if that's something you're interested in.
Yeah. And we're going to throw all the links, all the pertinent links to find you and follow you in the show notes as well. But where can we find you for anybody that's maybe on their phone right now scrolling and they want to go find you? Where can we find you and how do we find you?
I'm primarily, in terms of social media, I'm primarily on TikTok, and I'm at Dr. Mara Einstein, D-R-M-A-R-A. E-I-N-S-T-E-I-N. Most of that work gets repurposed on Instagram and YouTube, but anything political doesn't end up on YouTube because that gets a little bit touchy. I also have some additional content on Instagram in terms of quotes and advertising quotes and things like that. I also have a website, which is also Dr. Mara Einstein. You can find me anywhere. Everywhere is Dr. Mara Einstein, drmaraeinstein.com. And there you can find out, I have a section about MLMs in my website, and you can get a free download. I have a Substack newsletter, or you can get the newsletter through my website. I just do once a month, so you don't have to worry about getting spammed by me in terms of that. And it's just what my thinking is that month in terms of what's going on in marketing.
And then the last thing before we get to some rapid fire questions is, anybody out there, and we're such documentary people over here at Life After MLM, but any documentary folks that are looking for a new thing to watch, and maybe you didn't watch it when it just came out, but you're in a documentary and fantastic. Can you tell us just a little bit about it, wet our whistle and make everybody go do that next, is watch your documentary?
Sure. It's a documentary called Buy Now! And it's all about overconsumption. It's on Netflix. I'm the lead talking head and the voiceover for the film. And I get into all kinds of things like corporate social responsibility, purpose washing, greenwashing, and when companies try to act like they're doing good things and they're not actually doing good things, and how they get us to buy more things than we actually need.
Amazing. And we will absolutely be having a watch party to watch that together on Discord. So if you guys want to join us, join the Discord, watch the watch party with us, enjoy all of the amazing advice from you. Are you ready to do some rapid fire questions with me?
Ooh. Okay.
All right. What is one word that encompasses how you feel about deceptive marketing?
Evil.
Give me a piece of advice to all of us consumers out there that are falling for these tactics every single day.
Take a breath.
Give me the worst MLM in your opinion.
Ooh.
I know, it's a good one.
That is a good one. God, I've looked at so many of them.
Yeah, from an advertising perspective, who's the big baddie?
You're going to laugh at this one, but you
know. Is it Beachbody?
No, Tupperware.
Tupperware.
Tupperware. And you want to know why? And this is really fun, but you want to know why? And this gets into purpose washing. This cracked me up when I was looking at MLMs. All the MLMs have some kind of social cause connected to them, right? Because millennials and Gen Z are very concerned about the values that are connected to a brand. And so they want to know what a brand cares about. And so they all have some purpose, right? And so Tupperware's purpose was sustainability. And
more plastic.
And I was like, really? Really? Really, exactly like that. I just started laughing. And then what was really funny was that I went back to look at it again. And if people go to look for it now, they probably won't find it because after I wrote about it, it wasn't there.
I mean, how is it sustainable to be producing millions and millions of pieces of plastic that people don't even need?
Creating thousands and thousands of pieces of plastic because they're like, you're going to reuse this bowl forever. But when you're in an MLM, like any Tupperware person will tell you, like, you've got so many bowls because you have to buy so many to keep it. You're going to front load. You're going to have what you can't sell as your own stuff. We've had episodes about Tupperware on here. Also, I got tagged in a thread. I don't know if you saw this, but I might just send it to you. There was a thread, and I'll have to find it to put in the show notes as well. This woman, and she just followed me, so maybe she'll come on the show. She got a random package from Tupperware, like a $500 box of Tupperware, and it said, welcome to the team. And then it had like the woman's Facebook page and like the group. And she's like, you guys, I don't know this woman. I don't know where this came from. Why do I have this $500 box of Tupperware? Like, I think they were trying to charge her for it or something. I don't know. Again, I'm going to have to reach out to this woman and get the whole story. But the comments and what everybody, and I got tagged, we're all trying to figure it out. And the majority of people said, like when I was in MLM, this was a tactic where you would auto enroll people and hope that they would pay for it and they would join the team. And she's like, somewhere this woman in that hosted this MLM party that sent you this box, someone that went to that party knows you and wrote your name and information down on a dirt list. And that's how this happened.
So if she paid for that and just kept it?
She'd be in the MLM, I think.
Oh, she'd automatically be in. Yeah.
Like she was being enrolled. It said, welcome to the team. And she was like, what? I said, contact corporate. Tell corporate what you just got. Tell corporate who the rep is and let corporate handle it. I think the FTC would frown upon this behavior. And maybe Tupperware would take action because they don't want to get in trouble for breaking the rules. So I was like, just report to corporate.
Right. Yeah. Well, the other thing that got me about Tupperware, and I was sort of two minds about this, was they did a tie-in with Mrs. Maisels, the marvelous Mrs. Maisels, which on its face as a marketing tie-in, it was brilliant, right? It's perfect. It's like, you know, the 1950s and women and all this kind of stuff. It's like of the time period. It's what people think of when they think of Tupperware. But at the same point, though, here you have this major studio with a very successful, you know, media brand, entertainment brand, tying it to Tupperware. Like that they didn't get called out for that is really fairly shocking. And if you go to their website, I mean, I haven't been there in a couple of months, but it used to be when you went to the Tupperware website, they have like a separate area for the Mrs. Maisel's Tupperware stuff.
Wow. I mean, okay. Outside of MLM, that's brilliant marketing. Harkening back to the days of Brownie Wise and the early days of Tupperware when it was door-to-door before MLM ever poisoned the waters. Absolutely. And it's so cute, right? I've seen Tupperware at Target with like the pastel colors and people are like, but it's so cute. And I'm like, I know, but it's still a big baddie of MLM. It's wild that they, isn't it on Amazon? I mean, that's what LuLaRich is on Amazon too. So to me, it's just wild. Amazon, what are you doing? To do a tie-in and not just to make like a Tupperware adjacent fake MLM to be able to poke fun at MLMs in a comedy show. Like why they didn't go that route. I think it's perfect. I think it would have been more perfect to play the tongue in cheek with a fake MLM and add that it would have been funnier. but I'm not in charge of that TV show.
Well, it would be interesting to find out how much Tupperware paid for the product placement. That would be really interesting.
That would be really interesting too. Anybody out there that works for Amazon, Tupperware, Mrs. Maisel, anybody that knows and can answer, even if you're not allowed to tell, we won't tell. We'll keep it between the two of us, but we're very, very curious. All right, Mara, hardest lesson that you learned working in the deceptive marketing space?
Ooh.
Maybe writing your book. Ooh. Hardest lesson you learned writing your book about deceptive marketing?
Wow. I don't know that this is the hardest lesson, but I think the most interesting lesson that I learned was influencers aren't as influential as people want to think they are. Email works better than influencers, based on research. So that would also be a tip for people. If you're buying something because you got an email from someone, what I would also say, if you're getting emails from a lot of companies, take the time to unsubscribe from that. I mean, I think also just overall in terms of the book itself and what I learned in writing the book, that how much the overlap between marketing and cults is. And when I talk to people who are marketers and I told them the name of the book, and like when I would interview them, I wouldn't tell them the name of the book because I didn't want to sway them in terms of how they answered my questions. But then I told them what the name of the book was afterwards. And they were like, oh yeah, yeah, that's totally, this is totally what we do. And so that's one, I knew I was on the right track. But I think that one of the things that's happening now is sensory marketing has gotten to be very, very popular. And so it's when brands use all five senses in order to be able to get us to buy. And one of the ways that this is particularly deceptive is through smell, because your olfactory sense is very, very powerful for bringing you back. So if anybody, this is always the one that gets me, if anybody's ever used Head and Shoulders, like I used it like when I was early, and you come back and you smell Head and Shoulders again, it just like brings you back to wherever it was whenever you used that.
Mm-hmm.
Companies are using that idea more and more. And so the issue with that is that it's not happening on a conscious level. It's happening on a subconscious level. Now, this is not subliminal marketing, so let's not call it that because that's not what it is. But it is tapping into a way of overriding your brain to bring you back to what those smells are like. So think about this when you go into a store, and I know people don't go to stores as often, but if you go into a store, if you go to Disneyland or Disney World, they have smellizers to make different parts of the park smell different ways. And that's all being done on purpose. So just be aware, you know, every sense that you have is being used against you in order to get you to buy stuff.
Calgon, take me away. Absolutely.
Yeah. So look and see if advertisers, because one of the things that advertisers want to do is they want to tap into your experiences of when you were feeling happy. Right. And that's why, like, think about this in terms of music. Think about how music is used in marketing and advertising and how it is used as a way to get you to buy. When MTV was introduced, this is a great historical piece of fact for people. When MTV was introduced, it was introduced with I want my MTV, right? The term I want my MTV. That line was created by the same guy who wrote the line I want my MAPO, which is like oatmeal. So, you know, people who had grown up with I want my MAPO, 10 years later, were getting I want my MTV. And it was just a direct line for them to be able to put those two things together and buy into what was going on.
Wow. It also reminds me of Yo Quiero Taco Bell. Like, I want Taco Bell. That was in the 90s with the little chihuahua.
Yeah, with the chihuahua, sure.
Give me a positive takeaway from your work on this book.
I think there's a lot of positive stuff in terms of this. I think that as many influencers that are out there that are doing not great stuff, there's influencers out there that are doing really good stuff. And I talk about a number of those in the book. In terms of brand cults, I think that there are some brands that are good, but I think that the ones that aren't trying to pull you in are probably ones that are better. You know, the one of the things that I talk about in terms of brands and why brand cults exist is that other parts of our society aren't having the same kind of impact as they used to have in terms of our identity creation. So I talked earlier about having a job for 30 years. we're not in the same job for 30 years, so that's no longer an identity creator. Most people aren't attending church or synagogue or mosque in the same way that they used to 50 years ago. So that's not an identifier. Families break up and are divorced, and our family names just don't have the same kind of impact that they used to. And so what has happened is that the consumer marketplace has come in to fill the void, to be the creator of our identity. So, you know, we're an Apple user, or we're a Subaru driver, or whatever it is. So I would say, you know, all of the places that you can find ways to create identity for yourself that is outside of the marketplace. And it's not that hard to do. Be a knitter that's not selling your knitting. You know, go online and be part of community, but be aware the share button is about you sharing advertising. That's why it exists. It's about earned media. And you don't want to buy into that. I think one of the great things for me was learning about the MLM community. I mean, this is you guys. I love you guys. I think you guys are fabulous. And I've met wonderful people in the MLM community and the cult community. And I think that we're all working really hard for the same purpose. Because let's all, you know, identify really what we're talking about. This is a feminist issue. This is fundamentally a feminist issue. This is women that are being hurt here in a way that they aren't in a whole lot of other places. And it's all about, you know, taking down the patriarchy when it comes to all of this. And this is why, you know, religion, marketing, MLMs, it's why a lot of ex-evangelicals follow me too, because it's all part of the same stuff. And so what I'm really hopeful about is that people are beginning to connect the dots for themselves, whether it's marketing, whether it's MLMs, whether it's being part of a cult or some kind of control group, whether it's a religion or evangelicals or Mormons, and finding ways to get themselves out and helping others to find their way to get out as well.
What you say about it being a feminist issue is so spot on, and I've never thought about it that way until you just said it, because we tend to be the main purchasers in our families, right? Especially if you're in a American dream family unit where you're the mom and you stay home and you take care of the kids. You're the one that's making the grocery list. You're the one that's sitting at home watching the daytime TV, watching the commercials, reading the magazines, whatever, and going, oh, I've been looking for a new whatever. You're the one making these purchases. Maybe big, huge purchases are something that you and your husband or your partner might have discussions on and say, this is the dryer I was looking at or whatever. But for the day-to-day stuff, the crackers you're buying, the clothes you're buying, the music you're buying, the candy you're buying, the little things that you might buy on Amazon or TikTok shop or anything. Do you know the percentage of
80%.
80% of purchases are women. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so then that's why when people ask me if I'm a feminist, it's like, how can you not be a feminist and work in advertising and marketing criticism? It is, you are by default a feminist scholar.
I mean, you know, you hear things about like the pink tax and, you know, women are paying more for the same exact thing because it's pink or it's, you know, geared towards women. I've seen like pins for women. It was like, women, you know, women need a different kind of grip. I was like, do we though? Do we need to pay $1.50 more per pin for a different female grip? I remember there was a diet candy bar that came out years ago, and this was one of the first things that I was like, oh yeah, no, pink tax is real. It was this candy bar that was like 50% the calories of every other candy bar. And it was kind of like a wafery kind of Kit Kat looking thing, but there was literal mica flake in the chocolate. And I was like, oh, they made this sparkly because this is for women. The package was pink, the chocolate was low fat, and it had sparkles in it. And I probably shouldn't have been, I don't know. I was incredibly offended. I was like 27 years old and I was like, what the fuck is this? And I was very, very acutely aware at that point that I was being targeted by this chocolate company, and the chocolate wasn't even that good. I don't even remember the brand name, but I was like, there's glitter in this chocolate. Like, what is happening?
I know, it's crazy. And look, you know, it's, I mean, there's a lot of talk now too about how kids are more influential in purchases for families in terms of vacations, in terms of computers, because they know computers more than the adults in the family and all of those kinds of things. And so there is a certain amount of that that's going on, but that also says that, you know, we need to make sure that we help our kids as much as possible to navigate the landscape. The technology, you know, depending upon where they are, the technology in and of itself is not the problem. It's understanding how to use the technology. And I would say, in terms of young women, I'd keep them off of Instagram, because it's all, you know, it's understanding what the platforms were created for. Instagram was created for the visual. It was specifically created to make things look better. It's also really important to bear in mind that these platforms are performative. You don't see people having fights with their significant other. You see them having a wonderful holiday in the Bahamas somewhere. Nobody's life is like that 100% of the time. Nobody's life is like that. And for us to be set up to look at that all the time and think that that's what our life should be puts us in a mindset that is detrimental to who we are. And that's why you do need to go outside and touch grass and pet your dog and breathe fresh air and all of that good stuff.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. This was such a fun conversation.
This was great.
I'm sure once we all watch the documentary and we read your book, and I would love to have you back, even if we just did some fun Q&A and live stuff.
Sure. Yeah.
On Patreon or Discord. It would be so great.
Yes. Love it. Would love to.
Amazing. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure.
This was so wonderful. And it was so great to see you again, too.
I know you
do. I know we got to meet and now we're doing it like this. I love it.
This is great. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Life After MLM. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. And follow us on social media at Life After MLM Podcast or visit our website at lifeaftermlmpod.com. And don't forget to check out our Patreon for exclusive content and join the community on Discord. You can find all of the links to follow in our show notes. Life After MLM is produced by Roberta Blevins. Audio editing is done by the lovely Kayla Craven. Video editing by the indescribable RK Gold. And Michelle Carpenter is our triple emerald princess of robots. If you have a story about a cult, fraud, scam, or MLM and want to be on the show, please hit us up. We would love to help you tell your story and start your healing journey in Life After MLM. See you next time, Hunts.